Okay, DM. DM, can I do civilian secretariat first and then CIRA?
Okay, Chair.
Can they just get ready?
Okay.
Can you can we just load who is Pinda N? We're still early. I'm still waiting for the whoop.
I'm here, Tina. Long
yes.
time.
Yes, I saw Honorable Moss. Good morning. I saw you very early. How are you, Honorable Fako? Fako,
good morning.
I saw you. Chimbeni.
So, are you here? They want to start with you. Yeah?
Honorable Monica, good morning.
Yeah.
Honorable Patrey, good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Morning, Chair.
Good morning. Yes, we have the civilian secretariat. We still have time. So let's just wait. Honorable Mapatsu, are you here? We do have a quorum, but let's just give Honorable Mapatsu, he said he was joining. The 2128 is Dr. Kinney. He's struggling to rename his gadget. 127749, could you please rename your gadget? Or else I'm going to take you out of this meeting. 127749. If you don't rename your gadget, we'll be kicked out. Is this one of your members, civilian secretariat or CIRA? If not, I'm going to kick you out.
No, I don't think it's one of our members. All our members have got names.
They've named the gadgets.
Yeah.
Host, can you please remove 127749? Please remove. Even if you public, you must name your gadgets for our records, please. We can't record 127749. Host, please, you can remove that person. Honorable members, we have a quorum and I'm ready to start. We'll start, as I said, with the civilian secretariat. Good morning to all the honorable members and the directors of the civilian secretariat and CIRA. Good morning to you and your team. We'll give you an opportunity to introduce yourselves. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and thank you very much for being here. We have an apology from the minister. He is attending the funeral service of the Regent Queen. May her dear soul rest in peace. We also have an apology from Honorable Pumnaval, Honorable Meshu, Honorable Whitfield, and Honorable Molekwa. There are clashes with other portfolio committees and a number of those members, they have more than one committee and they have then They have then also asked to be excused. They attended 2 days early in the week, so I've allowed them to apologize for today. Mr. Rapia, you and your team get ready to introduce yourselves. Honorable members, before I really start, I would like to mention to the members that we had an incident where the Khayelitsha police told a complainant to investigate her own sexual assault, her own rape case. The woman went to the police the day after she was sexually assaulted. The officer told this rape survivor to investigate her own complaint. It happened while she was trying to report a case of sexual assault at the Site B police station. This happened in March. Honorable Deputy Minister, can we please investigate this? No policeman in this time where we are fighting gender-based violence and femicide from the president.
Okay, I know the case. It's an
ambience. Each and every member. Honorable Deputy Minister, can we get to the bottom of this? MEC Albert Fritz from the Western Cape was also attending to this matter. It is a complaint against police officers. I remember last year, a rape victim accused the Langa police of assaulting her while she was reporting the crime. This is a form of secondary rape and should not be tolerated. We should get to the bottom of this matter of Khayelitsha and send a strong message to police that if something like this happens where there's secondary rape or when a rape survivor is sent to or goes to a police station and is turned away, it doesn't augur well for us, because it means then that other rape victims will not have the freedom or rape survivors would not have the freedom to go and report their abusers. Honorable Deputy Minister, could we please attend to this? Could the staff also assist the Deputy Minister to get to the bottom of this? Good morning, Mr. Rapia. Are you ready? Deputy Minister, you could introduce the team, not the team, but you can introduce the performance plan.
Okay. Maybe before that, can we be given the case number if a case was opened and the contact details of the complainant so that we know who to. You don't have to say it on the platform. If I can be text the contact details of the victim and the case number if you have, but if you don't, I think the complainant can give us the details.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. We'll certainly take it offline and we'll work on this matter. Honorable Deputy Minister, you can now introduce the annual performance plan of the Civilian Secretariat.
Thanks very much.
I've noted the hand of Honorable de Blanche.
Chairperson, on the topic that you requested the Deputy Minister on, can I just ask that the committee gets a report back at some stage what happened, please? Thank you, Chairperson.
I will certainly do so. We'll also engage with the MEC Fritz so that we can get to the bottom of this. I've also received an apology from Honorable Sheikh Imam. So, Honorable Members, we'll continue. My apologies for interrupting you all the time. Deputy Minister?
No, it's okay. It's okay, Chair. I think we will report back to you on the matter. We'll definitely attend to it. That police officer is not representing the South African Police Service. Definitely, he or she does not belong to the service. But the administrative processes of such conduct will be attended expeditiously, and will report back to the chair so that the committee is given an update. We are here today with the Civilian Secretariat, which is led by the Secretary for Police, Mr. Rapia. and they will lead, he will lead in the presentation of the annual performance plan for vote 21. If you may allow, Chair, we can allow Mr. Rapia, the Secretary, to make a presentation through you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dean. Mr. Rapia, could you first introduce your team and then you may start?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, and all the honorable members. This is the first time that we are presenting our annual performance plan under vote 21, which is our own vote, having been moved out of the vote of the South African Police Service. With me, I'm accompanied by Itumele Moahi, who is the Director of Strategic Planning, who will lead the presentation together with Mr. Itumelo Konjwana, who is the Chief Financial Officer. I also have my other executive team members, Mr. Takarani Ramaru, Ms. Bilkis Oma, Advocate Don Bell, Ms. Ayanda Longwanda, who is our Director Executive Support. I also have Ms. Dipsy Wechoe Mang, Mr. Benjamin Nduli, and Ms. Pinda Nsaluba. Those are the people that are accompanying me and who are responsible, some of them, for these programs, who will be able to give clarity in terms of the questions. We have put the presentation, the first slide that we put, because this is a budget hearing, we put the first thing, it will be the budget, and also which will also indicate in terms of our MTF budget, so that as we discuss our plan, it should be a mirror of the resources that we have available. So that first slide, I will ask the CFO, Mr. Nkonjwana, to take us through that, and after that, Ms. Itumele Moahi will take us through the presentation, Honorable Chair. If you allow, Chair, I will ask Mr. Nkonjwana to take us through the budget.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable DM.
My apologies. Could we ask the presenters to please start their videos? And those who are not speaking, could you switch off your mics? Who is the host from the Portfolio Committee? And Itumele.
It's me, Chairperson.
Could you please remove one, this 127749?
Morning, Honorable Chair. From my side, my video is, I can't see anything. I hope you can see me from that side.
Who is presenting? Tumelo.
Tumelo, the Chief Financial Officer.
Tumelo, I just see a blank.
Yeah, it also looks blank from my side. I don't know, maybe the angle that I'm sitting at, but I can see it showing blank. Can I proceed, Honorable Chair?
You may proceed, Honorable Ter Blanche. My apologies for this. He has turned on his video, but he has started his video, but there seems to be a technical glitch. You may continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable DM and Honorable Members, the Secretary of Police Service, colleagues, and all protocol observed. I am Tumelo Nkojwana, the Chief Financial Officer for the Civilian Secretariat for Police. I'll be presenting the budget for the department. I need to indicate that the budget for the department for the current, for the previous financial year, which is being audited by AG now, we had a budget of about 137.1 million. And for the following financial year, for the current financial year that we are performing, which is 2021-22, as the department, we have a budget of about 148.9 million. The next financial year, which is 2022-23, as the department, we've got a budget of about 150.2 million. And for the last MTF financial year, which is 2023-24, as the department, we have a budget of about 150.4 million. I need to indicate at this stage to say that for the 2021 financial year, our budget was cut by about 19.1 million, which therefore suggests that our original budget was about 156.3 million. For the 2021-22 financial year, our budget was cut with about 17.4 million, suggesting that our original budget was 166.3 million instead of the 148.9 that we see today. For the 2022-23 financial year, our budget was cut by 23 million, which suggests that our original budget would have been 173.3 million, and although it's not reflected here, for the last financial year of the MTF, which is 23-24, our budget was also cut by about 20.9 million, meaning that our original budget for that financial year was 171.3 million. So those were the cuts that happened within the department. And you will note that as we go to the economic classification, most of the cut happened at the compensation of employees. Not necessarily the operating budget, but most on the compensation of employees. The compensation of employees for the year that is being audited, which is 2021, we had a budget of about 104.8 million. But you'll note that for the subsequent MTF financial years, the budget is even going to be lower than what we had for the current financial year. So in 2021-22 financial year, the department is saving 103.8 million on compensation of employees. And for the 2022-23 financial year, our budget has been cut to about 103.7 million. And for the last MTF financial year, the budget has been cut, this compensation of employees budget has been cut to 103.7 million also. So those will be the main budget cuts within the department. Maybe at this stage, I need to mention that if you look at the MTEC discussions that happened when the 2021 budget was being discussed, the Civilian Secretariat for Police has in total over the MTF been cut by about 64 million. And of this 64 million, 53 million is a cut on compensation of employees, and 11 million is a cut on operation budget. So that will be my presentation.
Hello.
Thank you.
You may continue.
Okay, good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, Secretary for Police, and all other protocol observed. My name is Itumeleng Ledwaba Moagi. As indicated by Secretary, I am the Director of Strategic Management, and I will be taking the committee through the rest of the presentation. Chairperson, I am now on slide 3 of the presentation. Part A of our annual performance plan, Chairperson, refers to our mandate as is articulated in Section 208 of the Constitution, our Act and our regulations, and our mandate has not necessarily changed. Our legislative and policy mandate also remains the same, with the inclusion of the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, which was assented into law in 2019. And Chairperson, I'm mentioning the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act in reference to its crucial role to the economic recovery and reconstruction plan, and the critical role that it will play in terms of creating that conducive environment for economic recovery. Chairperson, our institutional policies and strategies governing our five-year planning has also not changed. They remain the same. Similarly, with the court rulings, these remain the same, with the inclusion of the two recent cases, which are reflected on the screen as case number 7 and case number 8. These have an impact on the SAPS Act Amendment Bill and the Firearms Control Bill, respectively, and they have been considered in the amendment of both of these bills. Chairperson, I will also mention the fact that the Firearms Control Bill has been presented in Cabinet. In the Cabinet Committee of the JCPS cluster. And in reference to the SAPS Amendment Bill, there are submissions that are being prepared for the introduction, for approval to introduce the bill to Cabinet. Chairperson, I'm now on slide 6, our strategic focus for 2021-2022. Our strategic focus takes into account the priorities that have been set by the Minister of Police. At the commencement of our five-year planning cycle. Our strategic focus also takes into account, Chairperson, the fact that we are in the last decade of implementation in terms of the National Development Plan. So we are focusing largely on implementing those key policy instruments that will fast-track our contribution in terms of building safer communities. So with that, I will mention specifically the implementation of the 2016 White Paper on Safety and Security, the implementation of the Integrated Crime and Violence Prevention Strategy, which is an implementation tool of the White Paper on Safety and Security, and also the implementation of our partnership strategy and framework. These three policy instruments are critical in terms of particularly the lever mentioned in the NDP on building safer communities using an integrated approach and also increasing community participation in safety. So we are saying that through fast-tracking implementation of these instruments, we will also be more effective in addressing the lack of trust in the police and improving police service delivery. And they will also be contributing to addressing the need for a localized approach to addressing crime concerns and applying those local and provincial crime prevention frameworks in line with the district development model. Chairperson, in terms of our key achievements, in the 2020-21 financial year, we, like other departments, were affected by the generalized impact of COVID-19, and we even had to review some of our targets that were affected by the lockdown restrictions. These emanate directly from our Program 2, Program 3, and Program 4, respectively. Fortunately, our institutional outcomes and outcome indicators are aligned to the medium-term strategic framework. So there were no changes in terms of our strategic plan. However, changes, in spite of these challenges, Chairperson, we managed to record some key achievements, amongst which include the development and approval of our recruitment, selection, and retention strategy. I'm mentioning this in reference to the fact that we are prioritizing filling our vacant posts, as indicated by the committee earlier, in our earlier engagements. We've also developed and approved the change management strategy and operations management framework in order to improve business processes and operational efficiencies. We managed to conduct anti-crime campaigns in response to the crime situation and the gender-based violence situation in the country, and also in support of the fight against COVID-19. We also conducted capacity building sessions with all provinces on the detective services project. We continued with our monitoring of the Domestic Violence Act implementation by the SAPS. And in addition to this, we also conducted community awareness campaigns in order to create awareness on our role as the Secretariat in monitoring the Act and the responsibilities of SAPS. And we also produced a number of research briefs on topical issues affecting the SAPS. And last but not least was the publication of the SAPS Amendment Bill in the Gazette for Public Comments. Chairperson, on this slide, I will not, in view of time, I will not necessarily go through the details of our SWOT analysis. Just to indicate that last year in October, Chairperson, we had our strategic planning session during which we needed to reassess our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats in view of COVID-19. And at the time, we were also anticipating the second wave of the virus, which we have now passed through. So I won't go through all the issues that are outlined in the document, in the slide in front of you, Chairperson. Suffice to say that we are aiming to mitigate against some of these operational challenges that we've identified and that were brought about by COVID-19 by implementing our institutional value chain model as is reflected in the main annual performance plan. So this model will see us working in a more integrated and coherent manner internally as a department. Chairperson, we thought it prudent to also highlight some of the factors contributing to the performance of policy, given that obviously policy performance was affected by the virus, and our envisaged response in this regard, also given the fact that collectively as a government, we are striving to be more proactive and more circumspect in our approach and response to the crisis. So some of the factors that we've highlighted include, as you will see depicted in the slide in front of you, the impact of COVID-19 on the economy, the socioeconomic conditions that have been exacerbated by the virus, such as poverty, unemployment, and inequality, which will in all likelihood increase the presence of crime and criminal elements. We looked at police responses to the crisis, particularly with regard to the cases of police brutality that were reported during the first few phases of the lockdown. And also, just to reiterate what the CFO indicated in the beginning of the presentation, the budget cuts, which have hit us particularly hard when it comes to increasing our capacity as a department.
My apologies, Itumeleng. Why do you put the Minister of Finance when you show budget cuts?
It was just to illustrate the point.
It's not illustrating a point. The Minister of Finance, he only implements a decision of cabinet. It is government who decides on budget cuts, not the Minister of Finance.
Okay, my apologies, Chairperson. We've taken note of that, and we will remove it from the presentation for future reference.
You may continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. CFO did mention that there is a clear downward trend in terms of our allocation on compensation of employees over the medium term, which will affect us. So, Chairperson, we are saying that if we are to achieve our envisaged impact over the five-year period in order to build safer communities, we need to respond to a number of key issues, including the realignment of our policy and strategic orientation to contribute to the national priority of halving crime, violent crime within 5 years. And this is also linked to the NDP vision of creating a safe and secure environment for all people who live in South Africa. We also are looking at enhancing community engagement or strengthening community engagement through enhancing the role of oversight in contributing to the resolution of some of the burning issues that we've seen in the country. For example, the flare-ups that we've noted that took place in Normandine and Senegal. Chairperson, we're also saying that in terms of aligning our functions to improve police service delivery, we're focusing on tangible ways to strengthen the SAPs and enable them to become more effective. Determining how we will then implement, promote, and align both our national and provincial operations in this regard. At the time of drafting the annual performance plan, Chairperson, We were in discussions with our provincial counterparts to sign service level agreements for them to assist us in terms of some of the work that needs to take place. We also highlighted the need to ensure alignment with our strategy, with some of the normative framework of government, including the district development model, the national strategic plan on gender-based violence and femicide, among and others. We will continue to monitor the implementation of the minister's program of action that emanated from the 2019 crime retreat, and then improve collaboration, as I indicated, between ourselves and our provincial counterparts to address the capacity requirements. And lastly, we highlight the need to fully implement the reforms proposed by the 2016 White Paper on Policing, which includes repositioning and capacitating the Secretariat to enable it to fully perform its oversight mandate. However, Chairperson, is just to indicate that the budget cuts will actually affect our ability to be able to fully implement these reforms. So in view of these factors, Chairperson, and our contribution to the COVID-19 service delivery environment and our strategic focus over the medium term, our emerging priorities include the following: the finalization of an e-policing policy towards the attainment of a 4IR policing environment, implementing the integrated crime and violence prevention strategy, as I indicated. We will also conduct research on whether the SAPS is achieving its constitutional mandate as per the objects of police outlined in Section 205 of the Constitution. And the research will focus on the analysis of murder case dockets. Chairperson, in line with the NDP recommendation to strengthen the criminal justice system by improving cooperation amongst all the departments in the JCPS cluster, we will be participating in the cluster restructuring process to enable effective implementation of policies and improve service delivery.
Ma'am?
We will
Yes. I am really apologizing for interrupting you. You do not.
Yes,
we have received your presentations very early, and thank you very much for that. Thank you very much, Mr. Appiah and Deputy Minister. But could I please ask that you do not read each and every word on your presentation? We have received the presentations very early.
Okay, noted, Chairperson. So those are the things that we will be focusing on in line with our strategic focus areas that I indicated earlier. I am now on slide 11, part C, which talks to our institutional program performance. And just to indicate, Chairperson, that for 2021-22, we have 26 output indicators and corresponding targets, in comparison to the 29 indicators that we had in the previous annual performance plan. So this just talks to how we are trying to respond to the changing service delivery environment, Chairperson, and the budget cuts by being more focused in our approach. But also the reduction in the number of indicators is due to the fact that the integrated crime and violence prevention strategy has now been finalized and will be implemented this year. And it will also serve as the implementing tool for the white paper on safety. So this effectively removes two indicators from program three, and one indicator has also been removed or merged in program four, hence the 26 output indicators. The Chairperson, for our program one administration, we will have six output indicators, and we'll continue to measure our engagements with IPID in our joint consultative forums. And Chairperson, I'm highlighting this particular output indicator given that this forum helps us to strengthen relations between ourselves and IPID and strengthen the oversight machinery in the police environment, and also strengthens IPID's ability to enforce discipline and eradicate criminality in the SAPS, and is also one of the forums that are key to the transformation agenda of SAPS. We will continue to measure our vacancy rate and implementation of our two operational strategies to improve efficiencies in the organization. And in terms of financial administration, we will continue to measure the payments made to creditors within 30 days as is legislated, and our expenditure dispersed in relation to our allocated budget. On program two, we will also have six output indicators and corresponding targets, and the work that we will be doing this particular year, Chairperson, in Program 2 will be with a view to focus implementation on our partnership strategy and framework. So I will not go through all of the indicators, Chairperson. Also, just to indicate, in addition to this, we will continue to support the Minister's public participation program through our Izimbizo and our anti-crime campaigns. So I will move now to slide 18, which is Program 3. On Program 3, Chairperson, we will have four output indicators and four corresponding targets, which include the drafting of a national policing policy in line with the mandate given by the Constitution to the Minister to formulate national policing policy. We will also be conducting research and publishing our regular newsletter on our Safer Spaces portal. In addition to this, we will be submitting the two bills to the Minister for Cabinet approval. I'm now on slide 21, Chairperson, on Program 4. We will have 10 output indicators and 10 corresponding targets. Similarly with the previous, I won't go through all the output indicators, Chairperson, just to indicate that we will be focusing mainly on monitoring Minister's program of action from the crime retreat. And in terms of monitoring the implementation and compliance to legislation, we'll be focusing mainly on the implementation of the Child Justice Act and the implementation of the SAPS employee health and wellness program. And then in terms of our evaluations, Chairperson, the first one, we will be focused on the detective training program and assessment of the effectiveness thereof. And then on the our last indicator, Chairperson, just to indicate here, we will be conducting community perception surveys in line with our MTSF target on increasing police visibility and improving trust in the police. I am now on the last two slides of our presentation, Chairperson, on our outcomes, risks, and mitigations. Similarly here, I won't go through all the details, just to indicate that we've identified seven strategic risks that are aligned to our four institutional outcomes. And just to highlight that we are working to mitigate against these risks, you'll notice, Chairperson, that in our strategic plan, our five-year strategic plan, we had nine strategic risks. Two of these have been addressed, hence we now have seven. And just to highlight the fact that we've finalized and are implementing our business continuity plan and disaster recovery plan, which will assist us with any future interruptions to service delivery due to this particular pandemic or other crises that may arise. The implementation of our partnership strategy will also help to address some of the other issues with regard to our community safety structures and the CPF. And then we will also be procuring our own ICT infrastructure, Chairperson, which will help to assist the issues of ineffective knowledge management and some of the risks that come about due to the fact that we don't have our own ICT infrastructure as a department. Chairperson, I think that brings me to the end of our presentation. I thank you.
That was very well done. Thanks, Tumulen. Very well done. DM, would you still like to say something?
No. I think let's allow members to ask questions at the end of our presentation. Thanks very much.
Very good, DM. Good presentation. And thank you. We received your presentation well in advance. Thank you, Mr. Rapia. You can now prepare yourselves for questions, Mr. Rapia. Will you note the question that you just indicate who will respond? Is that in order?
Yes, it's in order, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
You will also just ask your colleagues to start their videos when they speak. I remain with the challenge of my network being unstable, so my apologies. Honourable Member, before you start with your questions, our oversight visit for Saturday has been approved. Could we send messages to all? We'll start early, 9 o'clock on Saturday, and it will be a one-day oversight. Honourable Members, we may call you again in June for another oversight because, you know, we we are a little bit thin on the number of oversight visits we have done. Honorable members, I now take your hands. I need hands for questions. I can see it's Friday. Nobody wants to ask questions. Honorable Tablanche. That's very good. Honorable Shembeni.
Can I start?
Tablanche and then Shembeni.
Chairperson, can I start?
May I start, Honorable Tablanche?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me also start by commending Mr. Rapia and his team. I really want to echo your comments on the presentation done by the director. I think she did an excellent job. That was really a good start for a Friday. Chairperson, I'm going to go to the strategic focus. My first question is about the first bullet point, and it indicates here on the slide addressing the lack of trust in the police and improving police service delivery. Now that is really something I think that is very important. Now the Secretariat must obviously prioritize its role to reduce violent crime through the promotion of more active citizenry and the establishment of a new social compact. My question is, in this regard, how are they sort of measuring the lack of trust in the police? Do they measure it? And what was their finding, the last finding, and then what are they doing to obviously improve that? That is my first question. Chairperson, I've got a lot of questions. You must stop me at some stage, I think. Chairperson and department should indicate whether they have access to the SAPS litigation database and to see how the SAPS is managing the litigation management process, and obviously includes responses. And, you know, because we will have to, as a responsible government, come up with something to try to manage down the number of cases that the police are in litigation that they are involved in. Chairperson, during the lockdown, obviously the time frames for delivery of projects were hampered overall. And now that we moved back already to some normality, I would like to know what the Secretariat did or are doing still with a catch-up game, if they understand what I mean. Chairperson, a worrying factor are the report cases of police brutality during the lockdown. And what is this in the short term that the Secretariat can possibly be doing or suggest as an intervention to manage this down? Chairperson, I'm still on the roll. The department stated that the white paper on policing calls for a repositioning and restructuring of the Secretariat into the SAPS. Now that is an interesting one. Chairperson, I think we need some explanation on that. Why would that be necessary? Because I think the Secretariat was created specifically to have a sort of an independent view and an independent role. I am very curious about this one. Chairperson, then a localized approach in addressing crime. That is obviously, I also support that. What I don't know at the moment, the intentions of the Secretariat, and how do they think they can possibly address that? Chairperson, then the carrying out of the duties and the functions of the Critical Infrastructure Council, including the remuneration and expenses must be defrayed from the budget of the the secretariat, but the budget does not allow or does not make provision for that. Maybe we can get comments on that, Chairperson. Chairperson, for now, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable De Blanche. Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, DM, and thank you, Mr. Rabia, and your team for the presentation. I've got a few questions. I would like to start with the issue of the CPFs, that the working relationship between the South African Police Service and the CPF, is it being monitored? How are these people being transferred? Are the CPFs still functional? And then being functional, I mean, how long are the members, or what is the so-called lifespan of the CPFs? Is it 2 years, 3 years, and what is happening? I've noted that with the CPFs, it seems as if most of these members are some of these members that are found to be the ones that are involved in crime. According to the Civilian Secretariat, how many of their CPFs members have been found to be involved in crime and being arrested and charged? Number two, the recently report by the panel of experts on policing and crowd control management recommended that there is a need for an overall review on the functioning of the internal and external accountability mechanisms in order to identify how their functioning can be improved to ensure that they operate in a mutually reinforcing manner. The review should be carried out under the auspices of the CSPS, and its outcomes reported to the minister, reported to the IPIT, reported to the South African National Commissioner, and be reported to the Portfolio Committee on Police. Now, I want to know, when will the Secretariat conduct this review? And then how is the department dealing with trauma in the South African Police Services? Are there any programs that are in place to remedy the situation? Because now, to the look of things, it seems as if the police are working under stressful conditions and nobody's taking care of them. That's why somewhere, somehow, we find that the police, their attitude, it's very bad. Now, I want to quickly find out if are there any programs to address the issue of trauma, stress, and some other things in the police, or these things, the programs comes when a police official has committed an offense or a serious crime or what. Are there any programs during the course of the year that these people are undergoing just to refresh their minds, bring them on board, to say that you are working with people? Because remember, most of these people that are in the SAPS, some of them are from the apartheid era. Some of them are from the new era, that is in a democratic South Africa. But now, if you can look, these people are not working like on the same line, of the influence of the training that they have. Now, sorry for that. Lastly, I think the Honorable De Blanche covered me a little bit on the issue of trust and service delivery. How is the department going to bring trust to our fellow South Africans to trust in the South African police services? Because the police are not trusted. Their uniform is being used by other people. We've got bogus cops that are committing crime. We've got a case in KZN where a traditional leader has been abducted until kidnapped until today. It's nowhere to be found. Those people were in uniform, South African police services. Now, how are we going to bring trust to our people? And how is service delivery going to be improved? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Faku.
Hi, Chair. I'm just changing my spot. I've got network problems. Thank you, Chairperson, for the report that we have received. Greetings to yourself, to the Deputy Minister, and to members, and to the team from the department. Chair, I think my focus will mostly be on the policy development framework. One of the questions that I had was, can maybe we be given an indication of the status of the white paper on safety and security? And also, can we be given an indication on the subject of policing, policy paper that will be developed in 2021 to 2024? The second last one, Chair, an indication of the subject of the two research papers that will be developed for 2021, 2022. And lastly, Chair, I see that in terms of the performance, in terms of submitting views, the performance has not changed. It's still two bills that will be submitted. And can we just get for which bills will be submitted for 2021 and 2022, Chair? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You may, Mr. Rapia, you may start with the responses.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll just show my face. I think I didn't do it when I started. Then I will switch off the video if that's fine. My team will deal with some of the questions, maybe just to indicate who will address which one issues, which deals with policies. I will touch on some of them, but Ms. Omar will deal with the additions if I've left out issues of legislations. Advocate Bell will deal with those. I will just go through that and then if I've left out, my team will come in. Just to indicate that when we said in terms of the program of legislation this past Tuesday, we presented two briefs to the cabinet committee for processing for public participatory comments. That is the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorist and related activities amendment bill. We also presented the firearms control amendment bill to the cabinet committee, which will be processed for public comments. And you also are aware that we published the South African Police Service amendment bill, which we are now finalizing the inputs from the public, and we will be submitting that to the minister to process it to cabinet so that it can be introduced in parliament. So that's that, but Advocate Bell will give some additional details regarding the other bills in the pipeline. The white paper on safety and security 2016. Currently what we are doing is we have now used the white paper on safety and security, and we are developing the integrated crime and violent prevention strategy, which is going to be the implementation tool of that white paper on safety and security. And also in the legislation that we are developing, we take into consideration the principles and also the policy decisions that are in that white paper on safety and security. With regard to addressing the lack of trust, we published, I think, in 2018, the state of policing report, which actually identified the areas of trust in the police. But we are also going to be doing an assessment in terms of the customer satisfaction or the community satisfaction in terms of the performance of police also in this medium-term strategic framework. The issue of the litigation of database, I will leave it to Takalani just to deal with that, because when it comes to issues of dealing with litigation, our M&E team, it works closely with the South African police in terms of making sure that we assess their capacity to deal with civil litigation. The impact of COVID in terms of issues that we couldn't address because of COVID, I must indicate that we believe we're not out of the woods at this point. Just as we were trying to catch up in around January, we had to move back and take our staff to work from home. But our program, it actually, if you look in terms of the targets that we have put, because we reduced some of those targets midterm as it was requested by cabinet and presented to the portfolio committees and addendum to our APP. Those targets in terms of what we have put in this year's budget, it's based on assumption that all will be normal for this financial year. We are actually making sure that we fast track when we have vacancies in our department, we fill those quickly. Although this issue now of a financial constraint because of the budget cuts, we try to improve on turnaround of filling in position so that we are able to deal with the backlogs which we have. But the program that we have, as presented today, it actually addresses even some of the issues that were not dealt with the previous year because of COVID. I've also indicated to my team that
issues that we put and we say we'll do in the last quarter of this financial year, we must finish them in the third quarter. So usually what the team will do, those who are dealing with issues that are final delivery is the fourth quarter, they will leave the planning and if there's issues of collection of data to maybe the third quarter before they start. So what we are saying, you start everything in the first quarter as if the year has got 9 months instead of 12 months. Those are the issues that we are doing to try to make sure that even if this the impact of the COVID now and those backlogs that we have, that we are able to address them this financial year. The issue of the brutality of the police, as you know, IPED has got the responsibility to deal with police conduct, discipline, and issues of criminality of the police. That's why one of the issues that we put in as our one of the targets that we have is our interaction with IPED, the meetings that we have on a quarterly basis, where we actually review whether SAPS is implementing the recommendation, the disciplinary recommendation from IP. That in itself, that work which we do, because in those meetings, we actually even invite SAPS to come and account. And if there are policy issues that are identified, which is making the South African Police Service not to do certain things, they get recommended from that meeting with SAPS, with the IPED quarterly meeting. For example, in the SAPS amendment bill, the introduction of a dedicated disciplinary unit within SAPS, it's one of those issues that will contribute to making sure that we've got disciplined members of the South African Police Service, and we will be able to address issues of criminality effectively, because when you don't have a strong disciplinary capacity, it makes people to believe that you can do as you wish and you are going to get away with it. But if we have that capacity, which is dedicated, we'll be able to deal with those issues. And of course, in terms of our monitoring and evaluation, we also look in terms of the type of training that is offered to our members, those who are new coming into the system, and the retraining that needs to happen. When we do monitoring and evaluation of that, we look in terms of what type of training is being offered to the members. The training is also key in ensuring that the police understand their responsibility. There was an issue of the CPFs, the involvement of CPFs in criminality and how many were found guilty. We don't have statistics regarding this issue. And I must confess that I haven't had a report which identified CPF members who have been arrested for criminality. And it's an issue that if Honorable Shembeni has got details regarding this matter, we can follow up if we get that information. We don't know of that. But we believe that the relationship between the police and the CPFs, generally, it's good. There are issues, I think, in the Western Cape, which we are dealing with, wherein the election
of CPFs in some areas didn't go well, and Ms. Bentuli was tasked to intervene and interact with the Western Cape, our Department of Community Safety, and the Provincial Commissioner's Office. But in general, throughout the country, the CPF is, the relationship is very strong. The panel of experts report, honorable member, you realize that this report was finally accepted by the minister and released recently. So what we are busy doing is to now, they say, an action plan that has been developed, and I wouldn't want to delve into that issue to say when are we going to deal that one as part of that action plan. And I think we will be able to be given an opportunity to come and present what are we going to do to make sure that the panel of experts is implemented. So we will be glad if the chair pleases for us to come and present that action plan that is being finalized. With regard to the police well-being, the police have got a big unit that deals with employee health and wellness, which also in terms of police officers that get engaged in traumatic situations, they get counseling. And debriefing. There is a unit that deals with that, but I think because we are going to evaluate this M&E target that is going to look into this area in our APP. So we will be able to do that assessment and we'll come and present in terms of how well this unit is functioning. And what are the things that we can recommend for improvement once we have done we've done that? Can I ask Mr. Ramaru, Ms. Oma, and Advocate Bell? Just to come in on some of the issues, and Ms. Bentuli maybe can also talk on the issues of CPFs. Starting with Ms. Oma.
You may continue. Honorable de Blanche, I've noted your hand. Honorable Faku, is your hand up again? You can continue. We'll take Honorable de Blanche in the second round.
Oma, are you there?
No, it's an old hand, sorry.
Thank you, Honorable Faku.
Chair, it's an old hand. I did not raise my hand. My apologies.
Yes. Thanks, I heard you, Honorable Faku. Mr. Rapia, your team can continue.
She can give it to me, the old hand, Chairperson.
Who is this? Honorable Mapatu, you were late. You must first apologize to the chair.
Oh, the chair. It was network.
Honorable Mapatu will take you in the second round. Mr. Rapia, where's your people?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members and Deputy Minister, Secretary. The issue that I want to add on is in terms of the litigation. where I need to indicate that in the past three financial years, we did three studies on litigation. I think we've shared two of the reports with the portfolio committee during the BRRR report. But maybe the simple answer would be yes, we do get access to the litigation data as and when we request from SAPS. So one can say that we will also forward the third report that we did in the 2021 financial year to the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Good morning, Chair. This is Advocate Bell from the Civilian Secretariat for Police Service. I would like to respond to some of the questions that were asked. May I proceed?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Once again, Chair, honorable members, colleagues. I'm going to answer Honorable Blanche's question first, the one about the Critical Infrastructure Protection Council. So the monies that will be used up from the Civilian Secretariat budget is for the private members of the council, which constitute about five of them. And this is to pay for their attendance at meetings and for their time during the day, and costs related to other incidences like that, traveling and what have you. The other members, which are about eight, are from government departments, and they will not be getting any additional remuneration for performing this function. So the funding will be taken from our baseline. So we will not be asking for additional funding, and the preliminary budget is between 250,000 and 500,000 per annum. And that's for the council. The secretariat of the council will be members from already existing members from the civilian secretariat. So there'll be no new appointments in that regard. Then with regards to Honorable Faku's question about the two bills, Honorable Faku, through you, Chair, the reason why it's two bills is because, first of all, bills take quite a long time to finalize. And then secondly, we've been requested 2 years in a row now from the leader of government business to limit and prioritize our bills. So because a number of our bills are quite far, they're quite progressed towards finalization, we are able to state that we will be doing two. So the ones that you are asking about for this year are the SAPS bill and the POCTATARA bill that Secretary has already alluded to. Those
Sorry,
were quite...
My apologies, the SAPS bill and?
And the POCTATARA, that's the protection, it's such a long name, Chair. The protection of constitutional democracy and against terrorist-related activities. It's those two. Secretary did mention the firearms one, but I think we'll still have quite a process to go with that, so we cannot be aiming for introduction for this year. Because it still needs to be published, and we still need to deal with that process. And then just to highlight also that the bills that we are busy with, as I said, are quite advanced. There's the IPID one, the stock theft, the secondhand goods, and also Chair, the DNA bill. We are going to brief Minister on the 17th and this of this month. And this is to be able to promote this bill through the JCPS cluster for introduction later this year. So we are also hoping that this one, this DNA bill, will be introduced this year. I think that is all for me. In case there are any other questions, I will reserve that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Next.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, Secretary and colleagues. It's Bilkis Omar, the Chief Director of Policy Development and Research. Chair, on the question of repositioning the Civilian Secretariat into the SAPS in terms of the white paper on policing, this is not accurate. The white paper proposes that the Civilian Secretariat be repositioned into the Department of Police. Chair, this recommendation or this proposal emanated from the 1996 National Crime Prevention Strategy and the 1998 White Paper on Safety and Security, where the intention at that time was that the civilian secretariat be the Department of Police to give it prominence, but also the proposal was that it manages the budget of the SAPS, etc. So we retain that proposal in this current White Paper on Policing of 2016 with a view to addressing these issues in the business case that we are working with DPSA to reposition the civilian secretariat. That process had commenced already, but because of lockdown, it had stopped, Chair. In terms of the status of the White Paper, the Secretary has addressed that. I will talk to the National Policing Policy Chair. So the status of that is that we're just starting the project. We have sent letters to the MECs and the National, through the Minister and the National Commissioner, requiring them to give us their National Policing Policy. We had done that to the HOGs last year where we requested. Remember, the National Policing Policy has to be determined after consulting provincial governments and taking into account their policing needs and priorities. So that's where we are in terms of the National Policing Policy. We are awaiting some of the documents. We have received some already, Chair. In terms of the research projects for 2021, Chair, last year we had started a research project on the analysis of the SAPS detectives murder dockets. And the intention there was to determine whether the SAPS their investigations of murders are rigorous, and if the NPA has sufficient information to secure prosecutions with the dockets that they're receiving from the SAPS. And then we also look at whether the NPA is only pursuing cases where there is adequate evidence to secure a prosecution. And then we're also looking at the conviction rates, you know, why the conviction rates are so long. So we started the project last year because of COVID-19. We did a literature review. This year we continue with the project, it's a joint project with the provincial secretariats, and we are looking at doing the field work and doing the actual analysis of the dockets. The second project, Chair, is on the recruitment process of SAPS. This project emanated from when 2 years ago we finalized a training project. Or last year in March, sorry, we finalized a project. We looked at the SAPS basic training project. And when we presented to General Zulu, she indicated that we must look at the value chain in the SAPS. So from recruitment, look at the whole process from recruitment, look at what the challenges that recruitment face, which actually impacts on the value chain in the SAPS, which hampers a professional police service. So that's the second project, Chair. Chair, I think I've covered all off on my areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
I don't know if Ms. Mentuli, do you want to add on the CPF or did I cover everything? Honorable Chair, it looks like we have lost Mr. Ntuli, but I have responded on the question of CPS.
Thank you very much. Before Deputy Minister, you come in, and before I take another round. The Civilian Secretariat is one of the most important units in SAPS. Yet, I do not understand why you have no presence, why we don't feel your presence. People know about IPED, but your communication strategy is not very good because all the work that you are doing is currently being done by the members of this committee, including the chairperson. All the complaints that you are supposed to receive are complaints which I receive from the members about training, enlisting, appointments. I'm very surprised that Honorable Majosi, you are not mentioning this. Because Honorable Majosi, you sent me many, many emails about this. And Honorable Shembeni. Now, today we're looking at your APPs, but we're going to call you in for a full session of the committee. One, we have two years left as a committee. This committee made a comment, a commitment to the public that we would amend the IPED Act, that we would amend the Firearms Control Act, the SAPS Act, and I think those were the three priorities. Thank you very much, Dean, for taking those two amendment bills to the Cabinet Committee. But this committee should be concerned that we have 2 years left and we haven't really felt this civilian secretariat. When it comes to the Western Cape, the CPFs and the Neighborhood Watch, the civilian secretariat you are missing in action, because those complaints, Dr. Kinnis, I'm sure you can tell them how many complaints I receive from the Western Cape on a daily basis. You are the same as the Central Firearm Registry. We have the same problems with you. We receive emails which are meant for you. And from now onwards, members, we are going to place this civilian secretariat under a magnifying glass. They've been hiding somewhere. We haven't felt, as I say, we haven't felt their presence. So their communication, I repeat, is not up to scratch. Advocate Bell, I agree that we must limit and prioritize. But you are also not prioritizing what this committee decides on. This portfolio committee is supposed to take your acts through parliament. So if you do not prioritize what we have prioritized, when do you think you're going to do our bills, our amendment bills, which we prioritize? In the meantime, you expect us to pass what you prioritize. Surely you should consider what the committee has prioritized. It would take this committee at least 8 weeks to consider. And this is really pushing it tightly, because I saw what happened with the justice, the bills on gender-based violence. Those bills, we have to go out on public road shows with especially the SAPS Amendment Bill, because this is the first time that the SAPS Act will be amended after the new constitution. The SAPS Act was written under the old constitution. So this still has to go to the different caucus groups, the different political parties. We have to go out. It's the public consultation for the SAPS Act is not going to be simple. And it's not going to be very easy, and we won't just be able to fast track it. Everybody has an interest in that SAPS Act. So, Deputy Minister, we're going to seriously place the civilian secretariat under scrutiny and a magnifying glass, Mr. Rapia. We have 2 years left as this committee, and we have no intention of leaving the work of this sixth administration for the seventh administration. And the seventh administration will be told that the committee of the sixth administration did not do the work of the third and the fourth administration. Honorable members, when we came in as a committee, we were told about work which was outstanding from the fourth administration, which they could not do. And it seems as if we are going that same route. This is what I want us to discuss in our strategic planning session. But I'm really not impressed and I'm not very happy right now. Honorable Tablanche and then Honorable Mapatsu. Honorable Mapatsu, please remember, we are reporting on a quarterly basis and we're telling people that we're doing the SAPS Amendment Act, the Firearms Control Amendment Bill, and the IPET Amendment Bill. But I don't see IPET happening in our lifetime in this committee. Honorable Tablanche and then Honorable Mapatswe.
Chairperson, thank you. I want to echo your sentiments. I want to start by saying that I'm not very impressed with some of the responses that I got. In the sense, if we can start with a lack of trust in the police. Apparently, what I heard what Mr. Rapia said, it's maybe just a feeling that they have, but there's no measurement about this. And I mean, you know, really, we cannot work on that basis. You know, I can think something is bad, and then in the meantime, it's not that bad. We need to have very definite and tangible sort of targets and, you know, proof. Chairperson, if I can go to the second one, there was a response on the secretariat moving back to the SAPS. Now, we really need a proper explanation what is meant by that. You know, a lot of effort went into getting them out of SAPS. So why would they like to go back now again? Chairperson, I don't understand what they also meant with the Department of Police. I mean, are they not already part of that? Really, I think they must come, you know, clearer to the fore that we can understand that. Chairperson, another concern of mine is about the office of the DPCI judge. It is incorporated in their program, but has no measurable performance indicators, despite the budget allocation. So my question is, if you have a budget and you don't have any measurable performance indicators, what are you supposed to be doing? I really need some explanation on that. Chairperson, and then my main concern, if you look at the performance indicators, really, we have spoken about this in the past. And we have 8 of them here in front of me. I'm going to read only a few of them. Number of police station oversight reports approved by the secretariat. Listen here. Target decreases from 4 reports to 3 in 2021-22. Chairperson, are we serious? How can you only visit 3 police stations? But you are the secretariat. If I can go to the most important one haunting this committee, number of reports on the functioning of the National Forensic DNA Database assessed per year. Targets remains unchanged at 4 reports. You know, really, I'm not even, now I understand why it's going, you know, the way it's going there. Chairperson, in a lot of instances, and I'm not going to read more of this, only one, the target is set at 1. That can never be, Chairperson. I'm sorry, but that is just not acceptable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tablanche. Next is Honorable Mapatsi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Some of the things have been covered by Honorable Tablanche, especially on the DCP, DCPI judge, that there is money allocated, I think, 6.8, I think, but there are no, the performance linked to that. But Chair, what I wanted to go to is what you have already alluded to, that we sit as the portfolio committee and commit ourselves that by this financial year, would have processed this bills or act. And it's our priority. We came in the sixth administration and there was a backlog. And we did not complain that, no, it is not us, it is those people who were there before. We took it upon ourselves that as leaders, when you come into a position, you don't complain that this thing was not done, but if it is a priority and it was not done, and we come with our priorities that they have been there for a long time, they need to be amended. And we take a decision together that they should be done. But I agree with you. We want to request the civilian secretariat to please make sure that these priorities that we have prioritized as the committee, they are put as a priority. And they can't put other things over what we have also prioritized and promised the committee. It's recorded that thing. So we don't want in other the next 2 years. We have not achieved that. We leave also the same thing that we found in place. It can't be right with us. I think all of us here, we don't want to go out in Parliament when I'm looking for a work somewhere. They look at my background that is served in the Portfolio Committee on Police, but they failed to process the following bills. What is he going to do here? So these things goes with our records also. But I just wanted to say I support your summary. I want to be like the PM that my apology that you have spoken. I was not supposed to speak after your summary, but I thought I should emphasize it. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mapatsu, it was not my summary. Those were also my questions, but my questions were still part of round one. I must still come in after round two. We're still now by round two. Honorable Shembeni, this is the last question. Honorable members, I'm going to call a meeting because I can see the civilian secretariat is at the core of all the work we are doing. Yet we haven't called them sufficiently to the committee. They will be called to a full committee sitting because we commit these things in the portfolio committee. It has gone public. You will have records in public where the chairperson of the committee, in fact, has spoken about the IPIT Amendment Act and that it was unconstitutional, that the court found certain judgments against the IPIT Act, and that we had to respond by a particular time. Am I correct, members? Did we hear that? Honorable Tablach, do you remember that? There was a deadline for the IPIT Act to be amended.
I remember that, Chairperson.
Yes.
It was a court order. So which means this committee will leave the IPIT Act and it will still be illegal. Honorable Shembeni, and then you will respond and then I will take the next, I will then take serious budget. Shembeni, and then they will answer to Blanche, Mapatswe, and Shembeni. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just looking at the mandate of the civilian secretariat, whereby the civilian secretariat has to exercise oversight of the South African Police Services to ensure a transformed and accountable police service and reflect the values of the developmental states. Now, when looking at
how our South African police service management is doing things. I am of the feeling that the secretariat is not doing enough in monitoring the South African police services. I remember last time I asked about their involvement in the appointment of the senior management of the South African police services, whereby I was promised that they were not that much involved, and then if they were going to look at it so that they become part of the processes. Now, the biggest question for the past years in the promotions at the lower level or lower structures, like from level 1 to level 9, we have not seen anything. But when you go up from level 12, that is from the brigadiers to the generals, I see there is a lot of promotions there that are happening in that level. Now, my question is, which members or which levels do we need most? Is it not these lower levels of the constables, sergeants, warrant officers, captains that are doing work at the ground level, that are doing the patrols, that are doing the investigations, that are doing all these things? Now, I will also want to know from each and every province. I've looked at Gauteng as to how many generals are there. And then I requested or I asked a question as to the budget of the generals only, if we can get that, that how much is the budget when it comes to the compensation of employees, the budget of the generals only, as to how much is being used only for the generals. And then it's then that we can go to the constables. How many constables do we have? How much is being used? Because now we've got also a lot of cases. I don't know whether the civilian secretariat is also involved in as to checking as to how many cases are there that are being registered against our senior management, and what is the progress in the investigations of these cases? Because with cases dating back as 2015 opened against senior managers,
are you in the office?
We have got managers who were appropriately.
You still remember the number of FCS units you visited last year?
Please, Sakalani, please, we don't want to hear your conversation. Honorable Member Shembeni speaking. Can you mute your mic, please? Honorable Shembeni, sorry for that interruption.
Thank you. We've got now members that are appropriately promoted. And then there were cases that were registered and followed. There is a member that was supposed to be demoted. It's not demoted up until today. But according to the books, that member was supposed to be demoted. What is the civilian secretariat doing with such things? A lot of corruption in the SAPS that brings to our people not having trust in them. We've got a lot of criminals there. I think the civilian secretariat has to deal with this thing, attending to it, looking at the cases opened against these people, make a follow-up with the IPIT and the DPCI so that we get a proper structure that we need our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. DM, would you like to start? Or could I start with Mr. Apia? You must move on now. DM?
Allow Mr. Apia to proceed, Chair.
Mr. Apia, you can proceed and you can allocate time to your members. You don't have to ask me, just continue, Mr. Apia, until you are done. We want to save some time now. We are we still have Sira, and you have taken up quite a bit of time. You will be called back to the committee. You may continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will ask Ms. Omar just to deal with the trust and Ms. Ramaru, because this work that they've done, both of them. So Mr. Ramaru and Ms. Omar will just give some additional information in that area. And I think they will have other issues they will raise, then I will close. And I think advocates
thank you very
will
much.
Also come in. Okay.
Thank you, Secretary. Chair, our state of policing report showed that in 2011, there was increased trust. So trust was increasing in the police until 2011, when trust was at 49%. However, if you look at the studies done by Afrobarometer in 2015, the trust in the police is at 45%. So even the victims of crime study showed that from 2011, trust has been declining from 64% to 57% in the police. So in terms of trust in the police, it has been declining over the years, Chair. Now, when we do our reports, our policies and our research reports, and we come up with the findings, we do hand it over to the SAPs and we give them recommendations in terms of how to improve trust. One of the criticisms we found that SAPs does not measure trust themselves. They don't have a performance indicator called trust. And we've recommended that they have to have trust or measuring trust in the SAPs as an indicator to show overall improvement over the years. So if they have continued exit polls or surveys, they will show that they can improve trust, or how they can improve trust based on the stats that are coming out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the MNE side, we also did satisfaction surveys as a way of also measuring the satisfaction level. So if I can just refer to the last one that we did in 18-19, and I need also indicate that in the current financial year, we'll also be doing another perception survey. So the last one that we did, we're looking at the satisfaction levels of the people who are reporting cases to SAPS, specifically focusing on the detective services. So the focus was at the time when they report the case and during the investigation to check whether they were happy with how their cases were handled, issues around the communication. So we've got a report which we can share with the committee. But I need to indicate that during that study, the results showed that 51.61% of complainants were satisfied with the quality of service provided by the detectives. We had a percentage of about 48.39% who were not happy based on the main issues was poor investigation, the lack of communication, specifically when it comes to feedback. And we had those who were also saying they were not being treated in a professional manner. So when we go to the next study that we're going to be doing, the focus will be now more on the visibility of the SAPs, and also the issues around the perception of safety by citizens. Because if citizens are not happy or not satisfied with the work that the SAPs are doing, then it creates this feeling of being not safe. So I think that's what I can add to what Ms. Omar has indicated. But the other issue that I need to maybe clarify is in terms of the visits to police stations.
The indicators, if I may refer back to the APP, when you go to 4.1.1, it will indicate that we're going to have four or three reports. But the four reports or the three reports is not an indication of the number of police stations that we visit in a year. As an example, we will be focusing on the top 30 high crime police stations in terms of the first indicator. And this is just for the national office, but the provincial secretaries at the same time that we work with closely will be doing at least 25% of the police stations. That is just for the general performance. Now, when we go to gender-based violence or DVA, we also have the top 30 and the secretaries also doing the 25%. Now, each and every indicator that we do, you find that there are elements that needs us to go to the police stations. And indeed, we go to the police stations, we go to the family and violence or the FCS units. So all in all, you find that in a year, we have done quite a number of police stations. I can put my head on the block and say, there's no single year that we find ourselves having done less than 100 police stations visits, including the FCS units. And that's what we do in a five-year period. Then that is the 4 years. On the fifth year, we do what we call the census of police stations, where we visit all police stations in the country. So after the visit to all police stations in the country, then the following 4 years, that's where we'll be focusing on the top 30 and 25%. Now to follow up on the baseline data that we would have collected during the census of police stations. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. This is Advocate Bell again. Just on the issue of the bills, Chair, as I previously stated, we were asked by the Leader of Government Business to reprioritize our bills in view of those which would have a positive impact on the COVID that's impacting the country. And as a result, we did focus on those that were already far advanced, not to disrespect the committee and the committee's commitments, but we were far advanced already with the SAPS and with the DNA and the POCTATARA one. The firearms, as
my,
I mentioned.
My apologies, Dr. Yes. Biao, Advocate Biao. We will go back to the Leader of Government Business.
Yes.
Dr. Kinis and Babawa, please make a note of this, that I should write a letter to the Leader of Government Business. Because it's the same Leader of Government Business who calls us to ask us progress on the bills which our committees have prioritized. So Dr. Kinis, please prepare me a letter. And before you continue, Advocate Bell, DM, I will give you a chance. We also agree, DM, that the Civilian Secretariat has to return with the SAPS management to the committee. Thank you, DM. You may speak.
Yeah, I thought what we should do with regard to what has been presented by the chair and members of the committees to note the issues that they have raised, and that as the civilian secretariat and the leadership of SAPS, as we go back to the drawing board, we see how we can take on board the issues and the concerns they have raised here, because I don't think it will be appropriate for us to say no. The line that the advocate is taking, I don't think we should take that to re-explain what we have explained. We have explained to the committee. The committee heard us very well and very clear in terms of what we have done. They are saying to us, they had put priorities in terms of the bill, and part of what we have presented did not put that into consideration. How do we take that into consideration? We should discuss ourselves how we can take that forward. If we fail, we must come back to the committee and report, which I don't think we can. we should go back to the drawing board. I'm saying this so that my view, Chair, I'm not saying you should not communicate with the leader of government business. You should do that. But it might not really be necessary to take that route if we are able to take into consideration the issues you have raised here, because I don't think it will be appropriate for us to close our ears and not take into account what you have said. And my view, which I'm putting through to the Secretary, Mr. Rapia, is that we must take into consideration what the committee have said and work it out on how best we can address that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for that intervention, Dean. We really appreciate it. Sorry, Advocate Bell, you can continue.
Chair, in light of what, thank you for that, in light of what DM has just said now, I would like to go along with what he's suggesting and go back to the drawing board and see how we can best address these issues that you raised, Chair.
Thank you very much. Next.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, DM, for your intervention. I think we will follow that route. I just want to deal with some of the outstanding issues that were not dealt with. The issue of the Secretariat moving back to subs, it's not there. What the white paper on policing is saying is that the civilian Secretariat for Police Service should be the Department of Police, just like the Secretary of Defense. Is the accounting officer also deal with certain aspects? There is a structure that has been put in the white paper on policing, which talks about the roles that we should take. And that in itself, it requires resources. And there is a structure that has been designed to deal with that. But as long as those resources are not there, we won't be able to position the department in line with the white paper on policing. So it's not taking back the civilian secretariat to SAPS, because it is unconstitutional to have that the civilian secretariat under the South African Police Service. The issue of the DPCI judge, no targets. We would love to have the targets for the DPCI judge in our plan, but the DPCI judge is an independent body that has got the responsibility to develop their own APP, and they must account to Parliament. We would have loved to just reflect what they are doing in terms of the budget. But it's a sensitive, the court case which the judge is taking us to court regarding this issue. Based on that, we didn't even want to touch what the judge does, but he has got the responsibility to account to the portfolio committee, and in terms of he has to account what is he going to do with the funding that has been allocated by Parliament. Honorable Chair, you spoke about the issues of us not being visible, and we have noted that. We have also have a communication strategy that we have developed, but I think you are correct to say that the work that you do, the civilian secretariat, is your foot soldiers to do what you do, and we need to engage more on that. And we would like to in the strategic workshop, we can share a lot of that, and also maybe agree in terms of how we are going to work going forward to make sure that we fast track the work that you committed to do in this term of government. Then this the issue of
Mr. Rapia,
yes,
I ask that you forward the responses of any outstanding questions. I'm running out of time. A number of members will be leaving us soon, and then I will not have a quorum. Honorable Shekini, is your hand still up? I know some of your questions have not been answered, but members have requested to leave, and quite soon we will not have a quorum, and we must hear the CIRA presentation. Are you okay with that, Honorable Shembeni?
I'm okay, Chairperson, but I need answers.
But Honorable Shembeni, I've also said that we're not going to get all our answers today. We want them back here with a full session and with the National Commissioner. In fact, they didn't even come with the Provincial Commissioners as well.
It's fine, sir. Thank you.
That they come back to us with the National Commissioner and the Provincial Commissioners. Could we agree on that?
Agree, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Rapia and your team. But this committee, what you have said, you correct, Mr. Rapia, and you correct, Deputy Minister. The work that you do is the work that we are doing in the committee in terms of our oversight. We have an oversight role, and we should strengthen our partnership. It should be a social compact between the committee as well as and the civilian secretariat. Thank you very much. DM, would you like to close?
No, it's okay. I think there is a lot of time to complain. Let's proceed to listen to CIRA. Thank you very much. And thanks, Mr. Rapia.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and all the members.
Thank you very much, DM. We can now move to CIRA.
Thank you, Chair. I'll ask through you to allow Mr. Chauke to lead the presentation on behalf of CIRA.
If I may, Honorable Chair, good morning. Can you hear me, Honorable Chair?
I'm sorry, Chair. I spoke of the CEO. I forgot that they've got a board. My apologies, Chairperson of the board. And my apologies, Chairperson.
Okay, I'm not sure if maybe there's a problem with my connection because I'm struggling to hear, but can I proceed, Honorable Chair?
Honorable members, I think that the chair has been having problems with the connection. She might have problems with the connection. I'll just check.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm back. Sorry, I was just trying to reconnect. You can start your presentation.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning. I just wanted to say from our side, Honorable Chair and Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, the councillors of the PCRA, we are here. I also want to indicate that I see our parliamentary liaison and stakeholder officer, Ms. Zingiswa Losi, is also with us today. So without wasting time, I will request
My apologies, I lost my connectivity. I would like to welcome our president of COSATU. As you have introduced her, welcome, Ms. Losi.
My apologies, I lost my connectivity. I'm reconnected now. You can continue.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chauke, didn't you introduce your team?
No, ma'am. Can you hear me? I was going to ask Mr. Chauke now.
Is the chairperson of the board who's on the floor? Sorry, chairperson. No. My apologies.
But Mr. Chauke must introduce the chair of the board.
Okay, now yes. Over to Mr. Chauke. He's here, Chair.
Protocol dictates that Mr. Chauke must introduce the chair of the board, Doc.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chair and the Honourable Members. Good morning to the DM and all protocols observed. Chairperson, I am led by Dr. Mufume, who is the Chairperson of the board. I would like to hand over to her to introduce other board members as well as the delegation of CIRA. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm just respecting you as the chair of the board. Thank you very much, Dr. Mufume. Sorry for the interruption. I'm just respecting you as the chair of the board.
Yes, no, I appreciate that. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. So from the our council, where all our councillors are here, except Mr. Ngubani, he had a family crisis. So Dr. Mbete is here, Ms. Nchangase is here, and the deputy chairperson, Mr. Ralibibi, is also here. You've already welcomed our parliamentary liaison stakeholder officer, Ms. Losi. So, Honorable Chair, I would like to ask the director of the authority just to take us through the presentation. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you,
Chairperson. I would also like to introduce the team that is here. I'm the director of CIRA, Mr. Chauke. We have Ms. Mato Sibokodi as the CFO of CIRA. We're also having Mr. Advocate Howard Twani, the acting director of law enforcement, Dr. Sabelo Gumede, the acting director of communications and training, as well as our company secretary or corporate secretary, Mr. Jacob Maholwane. The other colleagues also from CIRA are also joining. I will not introduce the parliamentary liaison person has been already introduced by the chair. Chair, I will be asking for the purpose of the presentation to be led by, my apologies, I did not introduce our COO, Mr. Stefan Badenhorst. He will be leading the presentation and followed by the CFO, who will be giving us an overview of the budget. Thank you, Chair.
Could you allow Mr. Badenhorst to start?
My apologies, Chair. We seem to have a problem sharing the presentation. It indicates to us that the host must disable participant screen sharing. I'm not sure it's from a secretariat side where they need to give us authorization to display the presentation.
Could we have the presentation? Could the host assist us with the presentation, please?
I'm trying to give them the right to share the presentation.
Thank you.
we winning? Honorable members, you can take a comfort break while we're trying to get the presentation.
A comfort break
for how long, Chair?
Sorry, Deputy Minister, they can have a comfort break for 5 minutes because you can start. They have seen this presentation. You gave it to us very well in advance. So they have a 5 minute comfort break. We want the presentation as soon as possible, please.
Babalwa, Stefan here. Are you managing on your side? Because it's still indicating to us that the host must disable the participant screen sharing.
Can I just assist? It looks like Mr. Matumela and myself are co-host. Can we allocate the COO as a co-host?
Director, can we give it to
Oh, Mr. Stephen Badenos, please.
No, Matlau Sebegodi, the CFO, I'm on my computer.
Okay.
Good. Could we make, where's, Sebegodi, are you the co-host now? I don't see that. Could we please make Sebegodi the co-host? Can you share the screen now?
Jay, can you see the screen?
Yes, we have the screen now. You can start. The members will catch up. We have seen the presentation. You sent it to us very well in advance. And thank you very much for that. You can start.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, can you hear me?
Yes, you may continue.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Deputy Minister and Honorable Members, Council Members and all protocols observed. Thank you for the opportunity. I know we already did the introduction, so I'm going to move straight on in terms of the presentation overview. Chair, we'll highlight a bit of the legislative and policy mandates. And then we want to spend a bit of time on the amendments to the strategic plan of 21 to 25. Following from a strategic planning session that we had, we reflected on our five-year strategic plans and did make some amendments as far as that is concerned, which is contained in Annex A of our annual performance plan in line with the revised framework. And then I'll delve in a little bit in terms of the annual performance plan for our four respective programs, which is administration, law enforcement, training and communications, and registration. And then our CFO will just highlight some budget information for the financial year. Chair, as far as the strategic plan is concerned, and I'll highlight some of the legislative and policy mandates. Our main policy and legislative and policy mandate is derived actually from the Constitution itself. Our legislative mandate is the CIRA legislation, the CIRA Act of 2001, and obviously compliance with the PFMA as amended. And then all the regulations made in terms of the CIRA Regulations Act, and we also highlighted the CIRA and the Private Security Industry Levies Act, which hasn't come into force yet, but is obviously we guided by that as well, and other various legislation relating to the governance environment. And then our policy mandates are, in terms of our longer range priorities, is obviously the NDP Vision 2030, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, and the African Union Agenda 2063. And then from national priorities, obviously, we align our plan with the 2019-24 medium-term strategic framework, and also reflecting on the justice, crime prevention, and security cluster priorities. In terms of the CIRA mandate, and we illustrated, Chair, in terms of the what we call the CIRA house, and obviously the ultimate aim that we want to achieve is what's highlighted in the roof of the house. And that's also reflected in the impact statement in our strategic plan, which is a legitimate, competent, and transformed private security industry. But before we can obviously put our roof on our house, we need to have sound foundation, which is the bottom part. And we highlight that sound governance, financial sustainability, and organizational effectiveness and performance. Once we lay that foundation, we build our pillars, which informs our outcomes. And our first pillar is the regulate, control, and enforce, because that is the mandate in terms of legislation. We are required to regulate the vast and growing private security industry and ensure that they do not pose a threat, obviously, to the democratic state as well, and obviously need to render services in line with their obligations towards clients and the public. So within that pillar, we obviously have our registration processes, we have our inspections and self-inspections, and then the compliance and enforcement strategy, including our prosecutions. Our second pillar is to promote, enable, and educate. That follows from the optics of regulation in Section 3 of our Act, which talks about stakeholder education, ensuring proper customer management, that the industry complies with their obligations contractually, also determining standards, accreditation, and verifications of training centers, and then research and benchmarking, and generally developing practicing guides, norms, and guidelines for the industry.
When we submit the report, it's across ABC, not...
Chair, I've got a bit of...
Obviously, there will be even cases where there is a shortage, there will be over-representation.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's quiet now. I'll continue. And then our third pillar is our transformation and advancement of transformation within the private security industry. And in this regard, we highlighted the sector transformation charter, which forms also part of the annual performance plan, and a sector transformation index. And once we've achieved these building pillars, then we can, achieve our impact statement, ensuring, and that is our roof, a legitimate, competent, and transformed private security industry. In terms of main policy focus areas for CIRA, obviously one of the areas remains the review of our funding model. The Levies Act is still not implemented. We are relying on National Treasury to move on that. Currently, we are still using the annual fees model for our funding. And Chair, as you and the members are aware, we are at this stage a self-funded organ of state, and we are relying mostly on the growth of employment within the private security industry to increase our income. But that will also be highlighted under the financial information. Part of the areas we also want to move forward is the implementation of our organizational redesign, which we completed in 2019, and we created phases for its implementation, which has been delayed a little bit in view of the financial constraints, especially that flowed from the COVID-19 environment during the previous financial year. But that is areas that we want to move forward and will result in us in ensuring a better regulated industry and our structure supporting what we intend to do. We continue to review our training standards for the private security industry. We've completed the Guarding Great courses. We are focusing on specialized courses currently for the development of curriculum. So that is one of our areas as well. Law enforcement program is our core business, ensuring that we capacitate that program and reduce the inspector security business ratio to one expected for 120 businesses. We have got over 10,000 security businesses currently and 79 inspectors.
And we, besides that, we got over 563,000 active and registered security officers. And the total is about 2.6 million registered security officers, of which I mentioned over 563 are currently active and employed in this industry. We continue to strengthen our corporate governance with the established council established industry sector advisory committees representing the different categories or classes of security service providers, for instance, the electronic industry, the training industry, the guarding industry, and these sector committees will be advising council as well in terms of their particular areas of operation and where we can improve the regulatory framework. As I highlighted, the transformation of the private industry is one of our key pillars in our CIRA house, and we've developed some indicators as well this year in support of how we're going to approach transformation in the private security industry. Awareness of our CIRA brand is obviously continuously. We did quite a lot of surveys, and we are pleased that the vast increase in the awareness of the CIRA brand, but there's still work to be done there. Development and implementation of regulations, improving the development and drafting of the regulations for the municipal consideration, that's continuing and it also forms part of our plan. And then a very important area for us over the next 5 years, Chairperson, is the digitalization of our services. During the previous financial year, we approved a digital strategy, which is the roadmap over the next 5 years. And obviously, subject to funding, we're going to roll out quite a lot of that within this year and the following years in terms of digitalizing our services, including and part of that is the decentralization of CIRA services. A lot of our services are very much centered here at head office. And in terms of our organizational redesign and structure, we want to decentralize a lot of our services, including decision making, in terms of to ensure that we have better service delivery to the industry and our clients, and then research and development also a key area for us as has been in the past. Chairperson, in terms of the amendment to the strategic plan, as I mentioned, we reflected on the strategic plan as management when we developed our annual performance plan, and there's some areas that we had to correct. And I'll highlight some of those areas. In terms of the MTA's priority, previously we highlighted priority 5, and we actually under priority 6, which is social cohesion and safe communities, just to correct the priority in line of the MTA's published by DPME. When we originally drafted it, there was still a draft medium-term strategic framework, and we had to correct that in line of the final version. In terms of the impact statement in our strategy, that didn't change, Chair. The only thing that we did is we just moved some of the wordplay where we previously referred to a legitimate, transformed, and competent private security industry. We just changed it to a legitimate, competent, and transformed private security. So we just better articulate the value chain and also the logical sequence in terms of the CIRA's operational focus and as highlighted in terms of the objects of regulation. As far as the outcome of financial sustainability is concerned, previously we indicated maintain financial sustainability. We merely removed the word maintain and highlighted financial sustainability and removed maintain from the aspirational outcome statement. And as far as the other two are concerned, professional, accountable, and trustworthy private security industry and a capable and trained private security industry, we did not affect any changes, so they remain. As far as the outcome statement we previously had in our strategic plan, enhance relations and stakeholder and collaboration with stakeholders, we removed it completely as the outcome statement because we see it as more as an enabler to the realization of all the other outcomes and not necessarily outcome on its own right, although we obviously do have stakeholder relations and collaboration as part of our annual performance output indicators. And as far as the private security industry is efficiently registered, we've removed this output indicator because it doesn't necessarily need to be one in its own right. It's part of our regulation pillar, as I highlighted in our house, and it deals more with the outcome statement, professional, accountable, and trustworthy private security industry. So registration just slots under that outcome statement. So although it's removed, it's still slotted in the outcome of a professional, accountable, and trustworthy private security industry.
And then the outcome as far as the private security is transformed, that remains within our strategic plan. Chair, this is just a bit of a further breakdown in terms of the changes that we've effected. I've highlighted in the previous slides just the areas of the outcome, but here we're just focusing a little bit on our targets. And I think before I get into that, I think I need to highlight the reason for some of the changes is just to ensure better alignment to the revised framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans. First of all, it was issued by DPME. We know they use new terminology in terms of where we replace strategic objectives to strategic outcomes. And when we developed our first plan, I think there's some of those targets or outcome indicators we identified were more operational in nature rather than strategic in nature. So although we are, we are making some amendments to the strategic plan, I want to emphasize that we are not in any way diminishing, these outcome indicators. Previously, they were just moving either to our APP or our annual operational plan, as I've highlighted. So the first one that deals with percentage billed revenue collected, that's a very operational outcome indicator in our strategic plan. So we just revised it and moved it towards the in the APP, which is reflected now in our APP as it was previously the case as well. And the outcome indicator that talks about the digital business strategy implemented, we've considered it more as an activity or enabler, and we moved it to the APP as well. And the committee will note that there as I go through that. And as far as the unqualified audit opinion is concerned, we kept it, but we just changed it a little bit and referred to the outcome indicator's external audit opinion as the outcome indicator, and then our five-year target will retain unqualified audit opinion over the period to 2025. Sira, I think as a committee will recall, we've had 7 or 8 consecutive unqualified audit opinions with 2 clean audits during the last financial year. And we pride ourselves in that, and we want to keep that as part of our outcomes, strategic outcomes. As far as the implementation of the guarantee fund for the private security industry is concerned, this indicator we moved to the AOP. And then as far as the amendments are concerned, then we brought in new outcome indicators that deals with financial sustainability. We brought one in for liquidity ratio, and we brought one in for organizational performance rating that talks to the outcome of relevance and performance. And obviously our target is to achieve more than 80% of our outcome indicators as per the APP. Chair, the next outcome indicator, professional and accountable private security industry, we retained it. So there's no changes. Obviously our benchmark currently, our baseline is 78%, and we want to achieve 90% compliance by the industry. As far as a capable and trained private security industry is concerned, the next 3 indicators that was previously in the strategic plan are very operational in nature, so we moved them to the APP, and the outcome indicator now deals with the percentage improvement in the quality of sector training and assessment. Obviously, training centers are accredited with us, and we want to ensure that they deliver on proper qualified training to the security industry. And then our last outcome indicator remains. The private security is transformed, but although we added 2 sub indicators, improvement, the industry chart itself, and then development of a transformation index. So Jay, that is in a nutshell just the changes we made to the APP. I'm briefly gonna go through the annual performance plan. And as I mentioned, we have 4 programs starting with administration, and they have 3 sub-programs, finance, corporate services, and operations, which deals with research and development. And the outcomes, the output indicators as far as the finance program is concerned, we again deal with the audit action plan, 100% implementation thereof that works towards our clean audit or our unqualified audit opinion. Ensuring compliance with statutory tabling and reporting, implementation of the risk management mitigation plans, and then revenue collection. That's always historically been part of our plan, and ensuring that we get the money that we bill the industry, which is payable to us. As far as the second sub-program is concerned, is corporate services. Within corporate services, we have our human capital, our business information technology, and legal services. So here we've got under business information, we have the implementation of our digital business strategy. As I mentioned, we have a roadmap as far as that is concerned, and we want to implement 40% of those indicators in our roadmap. And as far as human resources are concerned, we are focusing on employee performance in terms of our performance management system and dealing with vacancy rates. The last area in terms of the corporate services sub-program is under legal services, and that is the development of draft regulations for approval by council and then submission to the minister for consideration and publication for comment. Chairperson, under the sub-program operations or research and development, we have two targets dealing with research reports to be completed, as well as surveys being conducted. And then the last indicator deals with the output indicator of the development of the transformation charter for the industry, as well as the transformation index. And we set this target out for this year for develop that transformation charter and then for implementation thereof during the next financial year in terms of the MTF target period. As far as program two, law enforcement is concerned, Chairperson, we have two sub-programs, compliance and enforcement and prosecutions within this program. Under law enforcement and under the compliance and enforcement unit, we've got four indicators for the compliance unit and a number for the enforcement unit. The first one deals with number of business inspections. Chair, you will note and members will note we've reduced a little bit compared to the previous year, the target there. And the reason for that is more focusing on 2.2.2 in the table I'm showing now, is that we've implemented a business self-compliance self-assessment program. In terms of our previous APP, we actually earmarked that to be implemented in this financial year, but we moved it forward last year already in view of the impact of COVID-19. So we implemented it quite earlier in terms of our five-year strategy. And part of that is for the industry to complete self-assessments. And we assessed it from our inspectorate and assess it here, the supporting evidence support thereof. So we're actually increasing our inspection focus rather than decreasing it. The same applies to the number of security officers inspected. We set out the target there when we visit the sites and inspect the security officers. And then we will still have on maintain our indicator that deals with the conducting inspection at businesses licensed for firearms, and are working with the South African Police Service and Central Firearm Registry, and we've increased our inspections in that particular area. And then under investigation and criminal investigations, that is our enforcement unit, and we set our target for finalization of cases, investigation cases, complaints received, and then criminal cases opened against non-compliant security service providers. And then the last sub-program is the prosecution sub-program under law enforcement, where we set out a target of 92% of cases of non-compliant security service providers successfully prosecuted. So we bring in a more quality indicator there than a quantity indicator to ensure that we get successful finalization of these cases investigated by the law enforcement department. The last two programs is, first of all, is the training and communications program. They have two sub-programs, training and marketing and stakeholder relations. As far as marketing is concerned, we set out the development of a new cooperation agreement entered into with international industry regulatory bodies. We pride ourselves that we are considered, you know, one of the leaders in the regulation of private security industry in the world. A lot of governments, you know, benchmark their legislation against us, but we also find that we can still learn and improve as well. So we do the same, and we enter into agreements with international regulatory bodies as well, as far as that is concerned. And then, as far as marketing and communication is concerned, we set out indicators for stakeholder awareness and campaigns. Chair, as far as the sub-program training is concerned, training centers are obviously accredited with CIRA to provide training, and they need to meet our requirements for accreditation, both from instructors and from training centers. And we set our targets for the turnaround time in getting training centers accredited and instructors accredited to build capacity within the training environment. And we brought in a new indicator that talks about the auditing of instructors to ensure better quality learning takes place. And then we also developed an indicator for the number of qualifications determined and developed. We've reviewed all our grade guarding courses and developed new curriculum and enhanced that the curriculum there. And we are now focusing on the specialized security courses such as accident transit, especially events, reaction services, et cetera, et cetera. And then 3.3.1 is part of our digital strategy indicators, Chair. And this is where we believe we're going to change the way training is being assessed and quality assured by implementing online external assessments where the learners will have to complete CIRA examinations rather than that's compiled by the training centers to improve the quality of learning as well. And then our last program, Chair, is the registration program, which is responsible for registrations and renewal of certificates. And they've got three indicators dealing with the average turnaround time for registration of security businesses. We've reduced that quite considerably over the years, and our target is an average of 5 days. And for individual security officers, we've reduced that as well. And the average is of 12 days is what we aim for. And you'll see that it progressively becomes significantly less over the MTF target period because as we digitalize the services, it will improve.
My apologies. Could we wrap up now?
Thank you, Chair. It's my last slide. And then I'm going to hand over to the CFO to quickly just run through the budget. Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I'm not going to focus on the key risks and mitigations. I think we've highlighted the outcomes and the key risks and risk mitigations as far as that is concerned. Chair, thank you. I'm handing over to the CFO to deal with the budget information.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My apologies. Before you continue, my apologies. You know that you have to present through the minister's office. You have to send your amended stress plan to the speaker's office and that you must then table it through an addendum. You aware of that?
We did.
You did that already?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You can continue.
Thank you. The slide, in slide number 59, we're talking about the growth in terms of the MTF. If the average growth is 10%, the growth is mainly due to the 10% that if you look at the MTF period will grow by 10%. However, when we look into the future, we notice that the growth of our expenditure is higher than the growth of our revenue. So what we normally do as an authority, we develop a turnaround strategy and develop cost containment measures and strategies to increase the revenue throughout the years. So this year we'll be developing it for the third time until the levies model has been implemented. We'll still continue with a turnaround strategy to ensure that we are able to fund to an extent to the mandate of the authority. The next slide shows that we're just showing you how our the revenue is being generated. We are mainly funded by annual fees, it's 41%, and you notice that other income are still there making strides. And then in the next slide, you notice that we now showing you the actual figures. If you look at column 2021, where we demonstrate the 344 million, you'll notice that we have annual fees as also a high revenue driver, and then we also have fines and penalties making its way also. We're projecting that through the fines, we'll have 25 million there.
So it's those income drivers on top. We are planning to raise 354 million, and we are also not allowed to budget for a deficit or surplus. So we have economic classification, goods and services and compensation employees tied to that exact amount, funding the things that our COO just explained, that these are the plans throughout the strat plan and the year that we are presenting. And the next slide, we are also flagging the highest cost driver. We still see that employee cost is still the first. Because we are service-driven, we use employees to go and do the inspection, so we don't have any higher capital expenditure, and then followed by rental expenses because we've got offices across the country, and we also have subsistence and travel. But this item is being earmarked as one of the items that we should look at that we are going to reduce over the years, and even this year we are thinking that we are going to have a saving on this one, because it's one of the items that is flagged under the turnaround strategy under cost containment measures. And we did very well in the last year also. We had a saving because we have developed a business continuity plan, and where we learned how to use facilities like today. We could have been in Cape Town, but we are able to save plus minus 100,000 to put back into service delivery. Fingerprint cost is one of also the cost drivers that we are incurring. This is an inherent cost that we have when we register our security officers. So you'll notice it takes 3.5% of our budget, and consultancy fees is all those services that we don't have inherent skill inside. But before we have consult, we have the need analysis and check whether you have competencies inside the authority. The next slide indicates the detailed expenditure items that we, in terms of the plan. So you see that the employee cost is increasing by 10%. I'll just flag the one above the 10% because we have an OT that is planned, and we have to capacitate our law enforcement from 1 to 20 and from 127 to 120 per inspector. And I think Stefan also spoke about it. The next one is fingerprints, as I indicated earlier, that fingerprints are increasing because we're anticipating that there will be an increase in registration. So this is an increase. When you look at the previous slide, that we projected an increase under registration, so the fingerprints are inherent too, because before we put you in our books as a registered security officer, we should get clearance and your fingerprints tested, and that's an inherent cost. So it they go hand in hand. So the 46% there in terms of printing, we are planning to have our training materials being reviewed, and we are going to print the training material in terms of the curriculum development. And the next one that is big is also workshop and seminars. Oh, I'll go to subsistence and travel. I spoke about it in the last slide. Let me move to the workshop and seminars and function. We are planning now to have our brand awareness throughout the province. And we are also planning to have engagement or forums with provincial forums with our security officers, not only. So we have built a relationship with security business, but now we are planning to now meet with security officers so that we understand them and we are able to serve them better. And as we move into the online registration, we also want to share with them the benefits and how to use them. So we are now entering the security office. Officers think that's why it's a new thing, and we see that it's our biggest stakeholder, that we must understand them and they must also understand them so that we have a support. And the next slide is it continues again. I'll just go to the 94%, the one for council expenses. It's because of we did not have sector committee. So that's why it looks like it's a big amount, but we have sector committees that support the council that will be starting to operate in this financial year. So it will normalize once we have the committees established.
So the next one, I've already spoken about this one when I was speaking to that. This is a detailed explanation where we talk about the items that are have been highlighted in the previous slide. You notice that under consultation, we have the automation of service and research and upgrading of training standards and digital platform for security service providers. So those are some of the things that are in the consulting cost of 74%. So we want to move to being paperless and also ensure that we have efficiency when we deliver the service to our client. The next slide is about, it talks about the capital expenditure. These are things that we require as part of the business continuity plan and digital transformation strategy. We need to have software, we need to have hardware in terms of computer hardware, and also to ensure that we are able to support the services that I've indicated in the last slide of automation. So when we have to replace computers, we have to buy servers. So those are some of the things that we are catering for in this budget. And that was our last slide, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Mufume, do you have anything to add? The only thing you must tell us is that you're going to have a clean audit as the chair of the board.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. That is still our commitment to continue that good record, Honorable Chair, but nothing more.
Thank you, Honorable Mim. Hello? Can you hear me? I've lost it again. Hello?
No, we can hear you, ma'am.
We can hear you, Chairperson.
Oh, sorry, man. I've got load shedding, so I'm moving around.
Yeah, move around, Chair. It's fine. Yeah. We can hear you.
Thank you, Doc. DM, this, you know the WHOP is making fun of me today. I'm running up and down, DM. DM, do you have anything to say? Honorable members, that takes care of the presentation. This is a very good presentation, and all we want to hear from them is that they're going to get a clean audit again. I don't think there will be many questions. Honorable members, I'm looking for your hands. We don't need many hands for Sira. Honorable Tablanche, and then Honorable Shembeni.
Hey, person, yes, no, I agree with you. We don't need to ask a lot of questions to this people. I think it was a very good presentation. And I just want to commend them on the improved program targets. I really welcome that. And hey, person, no, I just want to, I'm quite happy about the that people can do self-assessment. I'm just wondering what percentage have been implemented. And that's my question, Chairperson. Thank you.
Sorry, Honorable Shembeni, Mapatse, and then Faku.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation.
David?
I don't have a lot of questions. Visit security guards. Somebody speaking?
You may continue, Honorable Shembeni.
Yes, I said, how often does the department visit the security guards on site, so as to get information relating to the rates, relating to the hours, their leaves, and so on? Because I once found or received the so-called complaint about a company that deducted money from the workers and did not submit that money
into the pension fund for them at an early stage, and the company's contract is expiring. I think it was in December last year, whereby you find that the company is deducting money from the members, starting maybe from June, and starting to submit the pension fund in September, to say. Now, another one is about the proportion, a large proportion of the public. Somebody's disturbing me, Chair.
I'm sorry. DM, can you mute your mic, please, DM?
A large proportion of the public is unaware of the regulatory authority for the private security industry. Now, as such, it is possible that the public's awareness campaigns run by the CIRA are not effective. What is the target audience of the campaigns of the CIRA that they have? And then can the industry indicate whether the training of the inspectors has improved and whether inspectors are trained in the areas of cybercrime? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shembeni, Honorable Mapatswe, and then Faku, and then Peacock.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I also want to echo the same sentiments that this is the department that has been consistently achieving unqualified report from the Auditor General, and must not lower their guards. But that's what I wanted to check with them, Chair, is that, you know, we've been talking about this thing of foreigners being in the majority of these security companies, and they're being paid load. I don't mind for them being paid load, paid low, because they are illegal. And we have been talking about this thing that we can't compromise our security. I'm happy that the president is here listening, that this should be prioritized as you do your oversight in checking these companies. We can, as members, also submit names of some of these companies who are taking work which is supposed to go to our people. Our unemployment rate is very high, but the main important thing is the security. And I think you have observed that many of them that are being deported because they have failed their IDs and all those things. So these are the things that you need when you do your oversight and visits. Just check on these things randomly if you suspect that company that it has got this thing, because we've got a lot of young people. I don't want to mention about military veterans, but that is a space that when you have your strategic areas or your national key points that are protected by private security companies, which are highly populated by foreigners. Our installations are at a high risk. So maybe when you do your inspections, please consider that. And your oversight, I think also people must know about you also, that what you are doing. Communicate, you are doing a good work, but people, they take security as, you know, that thing. They don't know the importance of this department, we have received information from the NASCOM that you are working together with the security companies as a force multiplier. That one we do appreciate. But I just wanted to raise those things. But the rest that you are still performing well, and we don't want you to lower your guards and say you are not going to receive an unqualified or clean audit. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mapatse, Honorable Faku, and then Kiko.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and we're indeed grateful for the presentation was received. We can see at least there's an effort that has been made. But given the budget that has been increased, I know that people will say, it's not much, it's a certain percentage, there's no much differences. Now, I have a few questions that I have. One, I see there's an increase on the number of professional and consulting services. Why is this? Is it because we don't have internal capacity to do the work? We have a lot of people that are currently unemployed. So why are we using these consulting services and not employing people if we don't have internal capacity? My second question is there's an increased amount on the traveling. Given the lockdown restriction, why is there such an increase of the number of budgets? And Chairperson, I also see in the performance targets there's a decrease in terms of inspections that will be done. Do they believe that the self-assessment is the only sufficient way to conduct this assessment? Because I'll give you a case in mind, and I know that I always complain to you about this thing. Normally, I go to court because I go to court to just do a follow-up on gender-based violent cases. You know how the security at the East London court treat people. So I think for me to just say that you allow these security companies to do their self-assessment, it's not enough. I think that number can then decrease to self-assessment, because of course people will only give themselves a high five while there's no high five that is deserved. And I also believe, Chair, that the regulations of firearms by the private security, I think it should be stringent, especially in terms of the firearms these people are using. For me, I think the regulation currently is not stringent. I think it's something that we need to look into. And my last question, Chair, is the issue, as we know, that there's a lot of complaint in terms of the dysfunctionality of the central firearms. I just want to check how is this affecting PRISA and affecting in terms of inspecting and the usage of firearms. Those are my questions, Chair. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Faku. You've taken quite a number of the questions I had, especially about the firearms. So I appreciate that. Honorable Peacock, and then we ask for responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to all this morning. My question mostly is what the Honorable Faku have already alluded to or spoken about. The issue of consultancy fee, as you can see, is one of the top five expenditures. How are they intending to capacitate the department in order to deal with the issue of not getting consultants work from outside to have their own people doing their work? I think it will also be able to assist in reduction of expenditure. Same applies to the fingerprint cost. I think since they've alluded on the presentation that they are busy with the turnaround strategy. On the turnaround strategy, they should start to look at in-house capacitation with regard to fingerprint cost as well as consultancy. But all in all, you can see that there's commitment towards the department. And I would also want to appreciate the fact that they got in audits. and also motivating that they should start to look into all cutting of costs so that they'll be able to do their work effectively. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Doc, are you going to start or can I let Mr. Chauke? Deputy Minister, you can start and then the Chair of the Board and then Mr. Chauke. DM and then the Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. If you may allow, let's allow the Chair and the CEO to talk to the issues and then I'll come along.
Okay, no, thank you, Chairperson. Maybe we can ask the team to respond first to those operational matters, Chair, and then I will...
Chairperson, Stephen Barnes here. Thank you very much. I'm going to deal with most of the questions. The first question that deals with the self-assessments and whether we've implemented, yes, Chair, we've actually implemented it already last year. We brought it forward. In terms of our strategic plan, we were only supposed, we only planned originally to implement it this year, but in view of the impact of COVID-19, we saw it as an important tool to ensure regulation of this industry and a difficult environment as well. And I think maybe it's appropriate to explain, because I also noted some of the questions asking whether it really have a significant impact. But I think it's important that I maybe just highlight that the self-assessment is not just a questionnaire that's ticked off by businesses and then submitted to CIRA. All the information there, it is a self-verification of on compliance, but the businesses are required to submit everything they report there with supporting evidence. And that supporting evidence is then evaluated by CIRA. We have a lot of the information on our database as far as compliance of the industry is concerned. So we match that information and we verify that information that's submitted against our own database information and assess compliance. So for instance, to give a simple example, if a business say, the question is, are you registered to the private security sector provident fund? They can't just tick yes, they are. They need to submit then a letter of good standing from the sector provident fund. So all there is checks and balances in place as far as the self-assessment is concerned. And if there's irregularities, it becomes an enforcement, inspection and investigation. Those businesses that fail to submit, that triggers inspections by our inspectors as well. And through that, we actually can do a lot more inspections than merely sending inspectors to businesses and reacting to complaints. Our regulatory scope is actually increasing with the self-assessments that support it in line with our law enforcement strategy. As far as the second question is concerned on visiting in sites, yes, that's part of our inspection programs. There's also an output indicator that talks about the number of inspections done by our inspectors at the sites. And we brought that in quite a few years ago because we came to realize that if you visit just a business, they paint a lot of better picture and they may give you double, false information and false books. So we actually check that at the site. So inspectors go to the different sites and they verify the security office. They ask about employment information. They ask about minimum payments and rates on hours and leave. And all of those things are addressed during our site inspection security offices. And if something is irregular, it's fine. It triggers an investigation at the businesses. As far as the public awareness is concerned, Jay, we will never say we are doing enough. We always need to do more in that area. We do have an operational plan that supports the annual performance plans target. And within there, there's different target audiences. Obviously, the security industry, the business and security offices are part of that, but consumers of security is part of that target audience. The public in general is part of that audience. And we have different platforms in how we communicate our services as well. We are very active on social media as well, through Twitter, and Instagram, and we continuously post information there and have quite a following on these platforms to educate the industry as well. As far as training of inspectors are concerned, yes, that's something we continuously address. During the last 2 years, we've, for instance, inspectors completed a training program on security, use of security dogs in the industry, and cyber security is something that we will obviously also look at. Our inspectors also went for firearm competencies in respect of all the different types of firearms, so they are more equipped when they conduct inspections on the use of firearms as a result thereof. As far as the use of foreigners are concerned, Chair, I think it's first of all maybe just appropriate to highlight that our Act, or although our Act says that a person must be a South African citizen, it also provides that if a person, a foreigner, has a permanent resident status in the country, they may operate. So we will have scenarios where foreigners are legally registered with CIRA in terms of the legislation. But that also forms part of our inspection programs at sites, and we actually post a lot of information and media information on where we acted against businesses that employed, for instance, unregistered foreigners in the industry. We are also, when it comes to security businesses that's possibly not registered and owned by foreigners, obviously from a government perspective, we have a lot of relationships with the government entities. To give you an example, in the government sector, we have a unit in the SAPS called the Government Security Regulator and the Government Sector Security Council, which we are part of. And in that forums and structures, we obviously continuously advise the government on compliance. And they are also represented and they are responsible for implementation of the National Key Points Act for strategic installations. And it gives us an extra assurance when it comes to our strategic installations that those security service providers that are deployed there are legally registered with CIRA. Chairperson, I think as far as the regulation of firearms in the industry is concerned, yes, that's a continuous process. And I think a question was asked as well, the challenges with the Central Firearm Registry. I will lie if I say everything is rosy when it comes to the our cooperation between one another. I think generally we have a very good relationship with the South African Police Service, but there's still some work to be done there. For instance, we've historically requested and still do request access to the Central Firearm Registry database. And there's some work that needs to be done there because the Central Firearm Registry database, we want a clear differentiation when licenses are issued to businesses that it's indicated as security businesses on the database versus, for instance, a veterinarian. And that's not necessarily the case yet. So there's work to be done there still as far as our work is concerned. But from our side, whenever we conduct firearm inspections, we compile a report on that. We also submit that report to the Central Firearm Registry as well, so they can take note of any challenges that we've identified or non-compliance for them to take action as well. We also, when any security business apply for firearm licenses, we have an arrangement with the Central Firearm Registry that they will notify us first. We do a report and submit the report whether the business is compliant, whether the business indeed have enough qualified security officers employed. So there is definitely that interaction between ourselves and the Central Firearm Registry before they implement or grant licenses to individuals. I'm going to hand over to the CFO, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The only question that I'm going to deal with is the one that is relating to consultant increase. The consultants are mainly, before we have consultants in place, we do a gap analysis, whether do we have resources. Maybe just to indicate what are we going to use this consultant for, it's online automation of services. And we looked inside and we found that we don't have a capacity. And we also, the other key driver in our consultant is
training curriculum to be revised in terms of specialized training. Those are some of the things that are going to be affecting our consultant. But before we do that, before consultants are procured, there's an assessment that it's being approved that we don't have capacity. And another thing that I just want to, as part of the cost containment where we were talking about the fingerprints, yes, those are the items. The items that reflect as the top five, we are constantly looking at them to ensure that there is a cost saving that is relating to that. So we are looking at exploring methods of ensuring that fingerprint costs go, they are reduced to an extent. However, I just want to indicate to members that fingerprint, we require fingerprints to verify the registration revenue. Yes. Thank you.
The chairperson is out of the radar because of the network. I'm not taking over, I think. Who's next, DM?
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add on the question on whether we are training security guards on cybercrime. We are currently not doing that, Chair, but we've identified that as a need for the industry. We will be working together with the MIC CETA, which is the CETA responsible for information technology. We had a discussion with the CEO there, and we have a draft memorandum of understanding to develop some qualification around cybercrime that will be bringing awareness to the industry. Thank you very much. So we will be following up on that, and we'll report on it in the nearer future. Thank you. I think we've covered most of the questions, Chair.
Yes. Is it the DM now?
No, that's Mr. Chauke, Chair. I was just saying we've covered most of the questions that we asked.
Yes, you did indeed. I was supposed to, Princess, you still want to speak, or it's an old hand that you must give me?
Hey, my arm don't go down. My apologies, Chair.
Yeah, you know I'm short of a hand, so when I see idling hands, I take them. Is it now the DM? DM?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks the Chairperson of the Board and Board members, the CEO and your team for the responses to the issues that have been raised. We appreciate this opportunity, Chair, and members of the committee that you afford us from time to time to account to yourselves in terms of what we are doing, and our engagements with you enriches us as usual, and we are grateful for that, and will continue to interact with yourselves in a manner that it will contribute towards us doing our work much better and smarter. But thanks very much, Chair, for this opportunity, and to members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM, and the Chairperson and the CEO and your team, the President and honorable members and your team, Mr. Chauke. This brings us to the end of our meeting. Keep it up and don't lower the. Bye-bye.
Bye. We have a lovely weekend. Stay home.
Hey, Chair. The way you say you are bye-bye, come on. I'm going to say, I want to rose.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Chair.
Bye. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, Honorable Shembeni.
DM, how are you?
I'm very well, my brother, and you?
I'm fine. Pukile na me. What's wrong with you, sir?
Why, in case I'm going to pukile, man.
Hey.
Go. You must visit DM. You must visit.
Yes,
you must visit Shembeni, man. Yeah, no. We must do that.
Yeah.
It's important for nation building.
Yeah, the province has not been visited.
Yeah, no, ningakhe samun.
Ya kun mashaka ya mina ko kwala.
Ya no loko mitile ipushelana itaja buso.
Hey, that's fine, PM. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thanks, Whip.
Yeah, thanks, DM.
Thanks, DM. Thanks, Whip.
Thanks, CEO. And greet the president.
We'll do so. She doesn't want to be called the president, DM.
You can't take away his elected position, you see. But I know it's fine. It's at work here in parliament. They will ask questions. Who is this president? But we know we as comrades want.